Time magazine made it a cover story. Newspapers across America had it on their front page. And radio and television stations made it a repeated story and source of constant comment. It all started in a front page story in the Sunday edition of the New York Times, reporting that researchers had found a pharmaceutical product that cured all cancer in laboratory mice. It wasn't just that story, but the credibility that was given to it by the New York Times and by a quote in the article from a Nobel laureate who said that in all probability, all cancer would be cured within the next 2 years. 2 days, 3 days later, tens of thousands of people were not only talking about it, but many of them were calling their physicians asking for further detail and asking for the possibility that they could be the first human patients for this experimental drug. Some say the story was premature and exaggerated, but it did demonstrate the astonishing speed with which good news can spread throughout our society. And I found something interesting myself, personally, that although I have never been diagnosed with any form of cancer, I was excited. I was thrilled. The prospect, the cure, the good news, it sort of filled me with excitement and with joy and with anticipation. Hold that feeling. Hold that feeling and listen as we read together the story from the life of Jesus in Luke 5, verses 12 to 16. While Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and begged him, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." And immediately, the leprosy left him. Then Jesus ordered him, "Don't tell anyone. But go, show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Yet the news spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. This unnamed man suffered from the most feared and hated disease of his time, leprosy. It was different then than it is now. In fact, the word leprosy has virtually been purged from our popular and medical vocabularies. If you hear a reference to the disease, it is far more likely to be referred to as Hansen's disease. That is a deforming and debilitating illness that often leaves those who are afflicted with it without any feeling, especially in their extremities, fingers and toes, hands and feet and ears and nose and around the arms and legs. If you visit Hawaii on vacation, or if you've been there, surely you go to Waikiki Beach. And if you go, 2 blocks away, just off Waikiki, is the Father Damien Museum. It is a place of memorabilia and tribute to a Belgian priest who gave his life in ministry to the lepers in the colony on the island of Molokai. You can see the pictures and read the story, or you can, without going there, read Father Damien's biography. It is the story of a terrible place. People were taken when they had the first sign of the illness. Many times, members of their own family were put with the patient aboard a ship, even though they were themselves not infected. They were dropped off at the dock on Molokai, and they would have to walk by themselves to a place where Father Damien dug a grave every day during all of the decades that he was there, where there was extreme poverty, where there was awful disease. It is a story, though, that has changed much in modern times. For if you were to go to Molokai today, you would see not a colony populated by many hundreds of people, but instead you can go there and visit and see a museum. And you can hear one more time the news that was announced just a few weeks ago by the World Health Organization that we are within range now of the eradication of Hansen's disease. that if it does not happen within the next few years, it will surely happen within our generation. But for the man in Jesus' story, that's 2,000 years too late. He was doomed to die, and it was long before any meaningful medical help was available to him. Besides, he may well not have had Hansen's disease. You see, the word leprosy was used in those times to refer to any one of a number of skin diseases, anything that you might find in a dermatologist's catalog of possible ailments. Whether he had Hansen's disease or some other ailment, it was an extreme case, for his entire body was covered. We can only imagine how miserable he must have been. I've tried to think what it must have been like for him. Tried to imagine from some experience of mine that might be very roughly comparable. I know it's a terrific stretch, but the closest I could come up with was when I was a junior higher. In seventh grade, I got poison ivy so bad that I was covered from head to toe. It was the bottoms of my feet, between my toes, all over my body, to the top of my head, in my hair. My eyes were swollen, almost completely closed. My face was so swollen that it was not possible to eat regular food, and so I had to drink out of a straw. Missed 3 weeks of school. I couldn't sit down. I couldn't lie down. Every place I was uncomfortable, covered with oozing blisters. It was miserable. But nothing compared to what this man faced. Not just 3 weeks of poison ivy, but a lifetime affliction of leprosy. Extreme discomfort and no prospect for it ever ending. But leprosy in Israel was far more than a physical disease. It was also a public health issue. In fact, the Old Testament law has very specific guidelines, public health guidelines for dealing with such infectious diseases. Leviticus 13:45 spells out the law that applied to this man, saying the person with such an infectious disease must wear torn clothes, let his hair be unkempt, cover the lower part of his face, and cry out, "Unclean, unclean." Can you imagine spending the rest of your life keeping significant distance from other people? Imagine that if somehow you receive new clothing, the first thing you would have to do by law is tear that clothing. That when you get up in the morning, instead of making sure that every hair is in place, you would have to be sure that every hair was sticking out. Instead of greeting people with a hello or a good morning or hi, you would have to, every person, greet with unclean, unclean. Imagine that you would never be able to touch your children or come close to them. That you would never again the rest of your life receive a hug or a handshake or be able to have a close face-to-face conversation with anyone else. Imagine the horrors of the disease. And according to the law, you couldn't even live in your own home. In fact, you couldn't live in a city or a town. If you were nomadic, you couldn't even live in the encampment. The law was specific in Leviticus 13:46 that as long as he has the infection, he remains unclean. He must live alone. He must live outside the camp. Complete isolation all day, every day, for the rest of life, until it must have been a loneliness that was beyond description. I read all of this, and I confess to you that I have such a modern perspective that I look at it with a certain measure of disdain, thinking, oh, those poor primitive people, what they didn't know and what they had to do. But then I begin to realize that they didn't have all the modern medicines that we have, and even if they did, it might not have been a great deal different. That what they were required to do was wise and prudent. We're talking here about infectious diseases that could afflict an entire population. And besides, even today, in major cities and major hospitals, there are isolation units. We are careful also to quarantine people with certain infectious diseases. Even if you take your child to a pediatrician's office, there may well be two waiting rooms, one for children who are well and another for children who are sick. So what we do is not a whole lot different from what they did. But what we may tend to forget is the enormous desperation, the huge psychological toll that this took on the victims of leprosy. For they were so isolated and so hopeless that many of them committed suicide. And so the historical records from ancient times to modern times reports the frequency of suicide among those who are diagnosed with leprosy. But whether back then or here and now, hopelessness is a frightening thing for any person to face. The label may not be leprosy, it may be cancer or AIDS or chronic mental illness or any one of 10,000 maladies which afflict our bodies and our minds. Whatever it is, when it comes our way, we begin to understand the desperation of the man in Jesus' story. That when he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and he begged him, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." He didn't just fall on his hands and knees. He laid out prone on the ground. I doubt that he even looked up to make eye contact with Jesus. Flat on the ground in the dirt, he begged for Jesus to help him. And I would have done the same thing. In fact, I think if I today were to face some extreme illness beyond the help and cure of physicians or any other means, that I too would fall on my face and beg for help from Jesus. And Jesus was filled with compassion for this desperate man. His heart went out to him, even though Jesus had made it clear, and we have learned earlier in his biography, that he never intended to cure everyone from every illness, that he would go off by himself and leave behind scores of people who were uncured. In fact, at the very end of this story is a report that Jesus left the crowds of people so that he could go and so that he could pray. But for this man, he had compassion. His illness was so severe and his faith was so great. And I think it important that we never forget the compassion of Jesus when we face our own pains and problems. That when we have those times when we are overwhelmed, when our minds just spin about trying to think of something to do or somewhere to turn, and the spinning does not stop because there is no solution. When we go to yet another physician with a thread of hope that is broken. When we don't know where to turn or what to do, and we think that because our prayers have not been answered as we have prayed them, that God has forgotten, we need to be reminded that that is not so. That God still cares, that he does not forget. Our special guest tonight is Steve Shogren. He is a friend whom I last saw in December when we were at a conference together in Ontario, California. During that first week of December, we were in a small group together, and the last time I saw him, we were walking down the hall, and one of us got on the elevator, and the other was left, and we bid farewell. Neither of us realized at the time that the next week, actually just several days later, he would unexpectedly have gallbladder surgery. And what was intended to be a routine operation turned terribly bad. Unwittingly, the surgeon nicked and cut into his aorta. And over the next several weeks, he lost 25 units of blood. He had 4 major surgeries in 2 different hospitals. He was left comatose for 10 days. When he was awakened finally, he was almost completely paralyzed. In fact, if you come and hear him tonight, he will sound fine to you, but you will notice that even the smallest steps are difficult for him to take, for the recovery is a long recovery. So did God ignore him? Did Jesus not care? Of course not. Jesus is just as compassionate today as he was in the day that he met the man with leprosy. He is just as compassionate and just as concerned for Steve Shogren or for you or me in 1998 as he was for this man in the story in AD 30. So if you are hurting today, listen, that Jesus cares. He really cares. But if today you are on a roll, you are at the top of your game, you feel just great and everything is going exceptionally well, could I just tuck away a reminder that you can pull back out when life comes crumbling down around you, when the unexpected turns what was wonderful into what is disastrous, that Jesus will be there, that he will be compassionate, that he will not forget, and that even if you are convinced that he lacks concern and is not present, that will not be true, that Jesus will know and that he will care with great compassion. But it was not just compassion for this man with leprosy. Jesus acted. He reached out his hand and he touched the man. He said, I am willing to make you clean. And everyone around must have gasped at what he had done. For nobody ever touched a leper. Probably people who had seen lepers all of their lives had never before seen this happen. It was illegal in the first place, but far more than being illegal, it was dangerous. It was unthinkable. It was just never done. But Jesus wasn't concerned about his own risk. Jesus wasn't all that concerned about what people thought. I read this story, and I imagine that this man, if he had not been cured, would still have counted this to be the most wonderful day since the day that he was diagnosed with the disease. Because probably it was the first time in years that anyone had cared enough to touch him. I think of Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who gave her life to touch the untouchables, the outcasts of India. People sick and dying on the streets of Calcutta, while others walked by, some walked on them. She went and picked them up and loved them. People who only had hours left to live. And she cleaned them up and treated them with dignity. And at least let them die in a clean bed. Just like Jesus. She touched the untouchable. Jesus touched this man and he was healed. Jesus said, be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him. Jesus totally and instantly cured him with a touch of his finger and a word from his mouth, and the man was completely free of his disease. It was then that he fell under yet another provision of the public health law, where he had to go to the priest, who was the public health officer, and he had to be fully inspected, and he had to offer a sacrifice, and then he was pronounced cured. And he went home. Can you imagine when he went home? When he picked up his children, when he saw his wife, when he re-entered the house that he thought he would never see again, it was probably the happiest and most memorable day of his life. But you know, there is a purpose in all of this, a significance far greater than one man's medical case history. For this was one more step in the process of revealing who Jesus is. That he is the eternal Son of God who was sent for the purpose of redeeming people from sin and hell. That Jesus had come as the Messiah to die on a cross and to rise again from the dead and to make it possible for once sinners to be forever right with God. Now, but there are a lot of people that claim that. There were a lot of would-be messiahs then, and there are a lot of would-be messiahs now. So just saying that this is what he had come to do really didn't carry that much weight. He had to do something to establish a platform upon which he would have proof that was offered, that people could check out and that they could inspect. And so Jesus chose to prove it by doing miracles. It was miracle after miracle, story after story, teaching after teaching, healing after healing, until there was a basis for his claim that he was God. Now, in this specific case, it was to show that he was all-powerful. That as God, he had the power to do what medicine and magic could not do. That he could speak a word and a man covered with disease could immediately and permanently be cured. So that the obvious conclusion would be that anyone who could do this must be God. So it was step by step that people would see the miracle, believe that Jesus is God, believing that he is God, would then be able to trust him as the Savior from sin. In other words, the miracle was a miracle that was more than for one man. It's a miracle that was for us as well, so that we can believe. But then Jesus amazingly says, don't tell anyone. I mean, that seems to contradict everything that he was about. Why wouldn't he want others to know what he did? And the reasons, I think, are two. He was concerned that they would miss the primary point for which he had come, that people would come by the hundreds and thousands, not to him as a savior, not seeking forgiveness of sin or the cure of their soul, but rather that they would come in a quest only for health and for wealth. And then that might lead to the worst of all possible alternatives, that someone could become healthy and wealthy, but die in their sin and never receive the salvation that Jesus had come to give. And besides that, Jesus was a humble man. He did not seek to be a celebrity. It was not his purpose to claim the central limelight of society. He was concerned that people, knowing of his miracle-working ability, would want him to take the crown or to take the sword and become a general or take the political office, that he would somehow miss out on why he had really come to be the savior of humankind. Jesus wanted to fulfill his mission for God, not become a public celebrity. He was wonderful. He knew who he was, and he knew why he had come, and he didn't want some inappropriate public popularity to distract him. And yet, the news about him spread all the more so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sickness. It turns out that it was a secret that could not be kept. How could it be? How could a man now cured not tell his wife? How could he not run to his children? How could he keep it a secret from his parents who had hurt almost as much as he had? How could he not spread the news to his brothers and sisters, to his neighbors and friends? Even if he had kept his mouth shut, people would have walked up to him who knew him before and say, "What happened to you? You look completely different." What answer could he give except that Jesus had cured him? And so if in his small circle there were 100 that he had to tell, and each of those 100 told 50, then the numbers multiply out into the thousands. And I think it's the same with Jesus today. That those whose lives are touched by Jesus, whose sins are forgiven, whose illnesses are cured, whose problems and needs are met, can't keep it a secret. Christianity was and is a word-of-mouth religion. You just can't keep the profound changes in a person's life a secret when Jesus has changed that person. Even if you do, it's so obvious that others come up and say, you don't talk the way you used to talk. You don't react the way you used to react. There's a difference in your life. What has happened? And so the word was out. The news spread. The crowds came. People wanted to come and themselves be cured, or at least as I would have done, I would have gone just to see it for myself, just to go see somebody else cured. And I think it's the same today, that when lives are changed, word gets out, and Christianity is still that word-of-mouth religion. As long as the word is spread, our numbers increase, and it can be no other way. A survey some years ago here at Wooddale Church reported that 76% of the people of this church regularly share their faith with others and or invite unchurched people to come to church. Christianity is still a word-of-mouth religion. The church is by word of mouth. It is the story of the difference that Jesus makes. Now, the points to this story about Jesus are really quite simple and powerful. Number one, whatever your need is, to bring it to Jesus Christ. That he is the one who has the compassion and the power that no one else has. Point number two is, don't allow your physical need to overshadow your spiritual need. I think that's a hard lesson. For we can become so concerned about our health, and rightly so, so concerned, but too concerned if ever we think that our physical health here now is more important than the health of our souls in our eternal destiny. That Jesus is more concerned about our souls than he is about our bodies. And point number three, to spread the good news, that once you have experienced Jesus Christ, you can't keep it quiet. You've got to tell husband or wife, boyfriend or girlfriend, co-worker or fellow student, neighbor or friend, or anyone that will listen. Spread the good news about Jesus Christ. Father, thank you for this Jesus. Thank you for the difference he made then, and thank you for the differences that he makes now. Whatever our needs, we come and bring them to him. And when we have felt his touch and heard his word and been changed by his power, we too shall spread the good news of what Jesus has done for us and will do for others. Amen. And now may the compassionate and powerful Jesus touch your need and speak to your soul. And may you tell others the good news of what he has done for you and what he will do for them.